I'm very honoured to have been asked to open this memorial debate to recognise the contribution made by Sir Brian Neil to the promotion and adoption of new technology by the court system. I knew Brian Sir best in his latter years when he was chairman of the trustees of the Slynn Foundation, of which I remain a trustee now. And it was extraordinary that in 2009, when I became a trustee, and for some years after that, until he was well over 90, he continued to travel widely across Europe on behalf of the Slynn Foundation on missions to enhance the justice systems in several countries in Eastern and Southern Europe. He was hugely respected and, of course, injected his enthusiasm for new technology into the legal space in his projects to improve the rule of law in those states. So the debate tonight asks how the adoption of new technology can be accelerated so as to improve the efficiency of the justice system. Now, this is a question of huge importance in the context of the UK's departure from the European Union, the rapid development of fintech, legal tech, and regtech, and the fact that young people in the 21st century are most unlikely to accept the delivery of justice for consumers or businesses at the ponderous speeds accepted as the norm in the past. You can now get everything you want in the world, as I often say, the same day or the next day by a few clicks on your mobile phone. And it's not reasonable, I think, to expect our citizens to wait years for a just outcome to a simple dispute. And I want to make four introductory points, if I may, before cutting to the chase to give my answer to the question set. The first point is this. We are already engaged in a massive court and tribunal reform project that will bring the biggest investment to the court service for decades. HMCTS is in effect a joint enterprise, as many of you or all of you will know, between government and the judiciary. And Susan Ackland-Hood, who is the chief executive of HMCTS, is speaking next, and she will give you more details of the reform project. But it's important to note at the outset that the project will deliver in criminal, family, civil, and administrative cases the digital systems that will be required to transform the way we deal with cases in the future. The Online Solutions Court is already undergoing full-scale testing for divorces and for small money claims, and will allow claims to be started and mediated online, with physical or remote hearings being reserved only for those cases that cannot otherwise be resolved. The second preliminary point is in my own field of the business and property courts. The business and property courts have been established to bring together the commercial, intellectual property, insolvency, technology and construction, and chancery expertise in one place. It should be noted that since April 2017, online filing of all court documents in the business and property courts has been compulsory for professional court users. Orders are produced electronically, and some hearings employ digital case management systems that mean that everything can be done digitally without using paper at all. And in a recent very large Court of Appeal case that lasted 2 weeks and in which 15 counsel appeared, each judge had three screens in front of them showing the documents referred to, their own notes, any documents the judge individually wanted to review, and simultaneous transcription of the proceedings. I did the whole case, including writing parts of the judgment, without using any paper at all from start to finish. It can be done, despite the fact that there were 40 or 50 paper bundles available had you wanted to look at them. Third point in introduction is in the context of Brexit, we are facing in this country hugely increased competition from business courts across the world, keen to attract commercial dispute resolution and arbitration away from the UK. There are existing international commercial courts in Singapore, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and Qatar, and new ones being set up hastily in Brussels, Amsterdam, Paris, Frankfurt, and Dublin, to name but a few. Most of these courts will be English language based and will apply what they tend to describe as some kind of a common law approach. We'll see what that means in due course. The fourth introductory point concerns new technology in the financial services and legal sectors. We have more fintech, legal tech and reg tech startups in the UK than pretty well in the rest of Europe put together. But Paris, Berlin and Amsterdam are catching up fast. There's a lot of EU investment in the sector, and there is an astounding diversity of ideas as to how we can use artificial intelligence to digitalise the grunt work of lawyers and other professionals. Digital ledger technology has far greater reach than many imagine. It will be capable of use in relation to smart contracts, of course, financial transactions generally, and in an almost unlimited number of other areas, such as land and intellectual property registers, utility billing, telecoms, and transactions in almost any other field. There are said to be some 3 trillion financial services transactions globally each year, and it's said that in 5 years, most of those will be DLT-based smart contracts. Any transaction on the blockchain is by definition borderless, and this throws up risks and opportunities. But I want to concentrate on the opportunities. English law and UK dispute resolution is well placed to provide the legal foundation for many of these contracts. And that's because in the UK, the Prudential Regulation Authority and the Financial Conduct Authority has adopted a very sensible wait-and-see approach to regulation, somewhat unlike the approach that is being followed in the USA. And if history is anything to go by, in the absence of the UK, the EU's approach to regulating fintech is likely to be more interventionist than our own. And our common law system is well placed to respond to digital innovation so as to provide legal certainty in this brave new world. So that's the background. We've come a long way already, but we need to do much more if we are to provide effective court-based and non-court-based dispute resolution services to individuals and businesses in the technological post-Brexit world. So how can the adoption of new technology be accelerated to improve the efficiency of the justice system? I want to answer that in the business context because that is my expertise. Others will be able to look at the consumer, family, and criminal position. The first thing we need is a change of culture. Judges, arbitrators, and lawyers are quickly learning the benefits of working digitally instead of on paper. See the example I mentioned earlier. And I would say that this change cannot come quickly enough. The justice system will be more relevant and effective if it provides a digital service to clients and court users who have long since reduced their reliance on paper. Secondly, we need to make a very careful evaluation of when we really need physical hearings with a judge, the parties and their lawyers, and the witnesses all in attendance in the same place at the same time. There will, I'm sure, always be a need for some real-time court hearings, but I think there are a number of technological options to reduce the occasions on which they are required in order to achieve justice. I'll return to those options in just a minute. And thirdly, lawyers and judges will need different training if they are to resolve modern-day business disputes. They will need to understand the technology, not so as to become computer code experts themselves, but so as to be able to resolve disputes arising from transactions on the blockchain that some argue will not require any legal foundation at all. It's remarkable that basic legal training has not changed very much since I started reading law at university nearly 45 years ago, which is a jolly long time. I want to ask you now to imagine a truly digital business justice system, delivering speedy and dependable outcomes for hard-pressed commercial parties at a proportionate cost. That should surely be the objective. So what would it look like, and how can we get there? It seems to me perfectly obvious that claims in such a system must be started and conducted online. The participants each need to have appropriate access to the court record, which, as I understand it, is the concept of the common platform being developed for criminal cases within the current HMCTS reform project. It's equally obvious, I think, that there are several available options for case determination, apart from the traditional physical hearing. I'm sure that some preliminary or interlocutory issues could quite easily be resolved entirely justly without gathering all the parties at a physical hearing weeks or months after the case has begun. The lawyer's task in business disputes should be to simplify the issues to enable them to be resolved in the most appropriate, cost-effective manner. Richard Susskind will be talking shortly, and he has suggested that asynchronous hearings would be far quicker and more efficient. His thesis is that very few issues really require everyone to be in the same room at the same time. There's no reason why hearing participants cannot log on when they have the time to do so within a time window. They can make submissions online. Questions can be asked by the judge online, responded to online. There's no need for much delay as a result. Just think how often the younger ones amongst us check our mobile phones to see if anything has come onto them. There's really no need to leave it 14 days for a response when you pick up messages second by second in the modern world. In this way, everyone's voice can be heard without spending the large sums needed to fly witnesses into London or elsewhere from far away. We can resolve many cases and some aspects of the even the most complex cases without paying for partners in law firms, assistant solicitors, and the parties and barristers all to sit, sometimes for hours or days on end, listening to material they can pick up online in no time at all. Business travel is simply far less acceptable today. Some of the biggest global professional law firms ban their staff from travelling internationally, requiring them instead to conduct overseas business meetings by Skype, FaceTime, or telepresence. And those of you that have participated in a telepresence meeting know that it's really almost identical to a real meeting. You can see the people at life size sitting across the table from you. You can even read what they're writing if they're using that ridiculously old-fashioned method of recording. We can apply a combination of these mechanisms to business dispute resolution. Take two common situations: the case where interim relief is sought in a business case, and the case where factual and legal issues need to be resolved at what we now call a trial. In the case of a claim, say, for a freezing order to prevent a defendant from putting his assets out of the reach of the claimant, the claim is already lodged online in the business and property courts. The relief could also be granted online. The judge could consider the material filed online, ask any questions he wanted, receive the answers, and make the appropriate order. The party seeking the order would, of course, need to provide full and frank disclosure to the court, just as he does now. A real-time hearing, whether electronic or in person, could be convened only in cases where it was truly necessary. Another advantage is that the record would show what the court had been told, so that once the defendant was informed of the order, it could apply to set aside the injunction by exactly the same process. Even cases involving multiple parties and witnesses could be resolved wholly or partially in a similar way. Preliminary issues could be resolved by online argument, questions and answers, and a judicial determination occurring without costly court attendances by lawyers and parties. Even evidence could be given in writing, online, or remotely by Skype. In some cases, time in court is really crucial, so don't think that I'm not accepting that. And I don't suggest that real-time hearings will never happen. They certainly will, and they will be required. And I can give some examples where justice could not be done without them. But there are many cases where parts of the trial process are simply costly and unnecessary. And why, for example, do we still, sometimes if not always, have written submissions reiterated orally before and after oral evidence? Why do we need days of evidence when in reality there are very rarely more than a handful of substantive factual disputes, and even those are often born of misunderstanding or mistrust rather than substantive disagreement as to what actually occurred? In many cases, a good proportion of the factual disputes are irrelevant to the outcome and could be avoided altogether if the matter had been considered in greater detail at an early stage. If the judges were more participative online, asking questions, directing evidence, resolving cases stage by stage, they could probably resolve or decide the majority of even lengthy trials by an iterative online process. We are probably too hidebound by our procedural rules and our long-established practices. Greater flexibility and imagination could cut through the most difficult questions and mean that oral evidence at a synchronous hearing could become the exception rather than the rule. When it was needed, such a hearing would be efficient and businesslike. It would be conducted by a judge who was already totally au fait with the issues and the stage that her online trial had reached, and what she truly needed to know to resolve the issues that really divided the parties in the case. It's very unlikely, I think, that once smart contracts and DLT become ubiquitous in financial services, banking, insurance, intellectual property, employment, and almost every other legal field imaginable, the parties to a dispute over those engagements will want it resolved by a trial in a traditional courtroom with everyone flying in from around the world to be present in the same space and time. Financial business is already largely global and will be totally global once borderless digital ledger technology takes hold. Now, despite my unbounded enthusiasm, which I expect I have already demonstrated for digital solutions, I would add two important caveats. First, the simultaneous transcription services and the case management systems that I've spoken about that allow for paperless trials and appeals are expensive and at the moment are paid for by the parties. It's important to ensure that we consider how digital processes can be made available to business litigants in the biggest cases, in the smallest cases, as well as the biggest cases, not the wrong way around. And my second caveat concerns the need to respect a number of core principles of our justice system. And here I'm becoming a bit more judgy, so watch out. And those are the elements of the rule of law itself. The most obviously relevant of these principles are open justice and access to justice. If court hearings were no longer to be the norm, we would need to find ways of ensuring appropriate public access to the digital judicial process. Under no circumstances can justice be delivered behind closed doors. Moreover, whilst access to justice is generally enhanced by smart procedures, we must keep a wary eye on ensuring that the use of technology does not exclude the vulnerable or the less wealthy. All that said, I think our business and property courts are doing well in terms of operational efficiency and providing state-of-the-art litigation processes. There is some way to go, but we're well on track. We need to continue to think imaginatively about our civil procedure in the context of both Brexit and the digital revolution. We're well placed in the UK to deliver justice in a world-leading way. But to do that, we will need to continue to invest in reform, Susan, and closely evaluate the innovations emanating from our legal tech startups. Now, in the course of the evening, I much look forward to hearing your ideas on how new technology can be used to improve our justice system. I hope I will be able to take away a fund of brilliant proposals to consider for the future. But let me finish as I started by paying tribute to Sir Brian's unrivalled contribution to the use of technology in the law. Thank you.